interesting program in terms of how the master gardeners have been used for looking at viburnum leaf beetle as an emerging pest. There were also some interesting information and training going on in Washington, and Eric Lagasse and Todd Murray provided this information. Master gardeners in Washington, through their Master Gardener Clinic, have actually detected new pests to their state, including cherry bark tortrix, European chafer, and viburnum leaf beetle. And also, you can see on this slide an interesting link to an information of a way that master gardeners have been used to be included in data collection for an exotic wireworm study. So that is also interesting. And the final story to share that I have is actually from Susan Halbert with the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. And she found an opportunity to relay information to master gardeners when she was out on a survey for citrus greening. Then she was talking to one of the Division of Plant Industry inspectors, and they mentioned to her that the master gardeners had some citrus trees at the Marion County Extension Office. Even though her regular survey efforts did not result in finding greening, there was actually greening on the premises with where the master gardeners had their citrus trees. So this was just another opportunity. She saw the opportunity to create additional educational materials for them and have a specific training session for these master gardeners. And that's all I have. Thank you for putting up with my very dry and difficult voice today. And I'll be happy to talk with any of you during the meeting at any point. Thank you.
To a large part, an extension presentation. And what this is, blueberry maggot in New Jersey blueberries is probably the principal pest which drives insecticide use with repeated applications, and partially because we have a zero tolerance for both shipping within the country and exports. Unlike processed berries, there's a zero tolerance. Most people tend not to like to eat berries with extra protein. When our growers export berries to Canada, they have to manage as if they were...
Primarily, these fruit flies that I work with are apple maggot, blueberry maggot, and cherry fruit fly. Most of the data that I'll be showing today pertains to apple maggot. Why baits? Baits may be an alternative to FQPA-targeted conventional insecticides. Baits are generally safer for applicators and the environment because of the lower rates of AI used per unit of area. And also because baits allow using compounds that have mostly activity through ingestion. What happens though is that baits used for fruit fly control are made up mostly of protein, hydrolysate, and sugar. These two substances are the basis for the phagosimulatory properties, and while the fly is happy ingesting these compounds, it's taking up a dose of insecticide, and therefore that's how baits achieve their end. The problem is that both protein hydrolysate and sugar are very water soluble and very hygroscopic. And this poses a problem for using baits in climates with a humid summer, like for example Michigan. And so our objective in this study was to find a way to increase bait rain fastness for use in a climate like Michigan in summer. We wanted to have bait resist, say, a shower, summer shower, and our basic requirements were about resisting about 1 inch of rain in 1 hour, 25 millimeters of rain in 1 hour. But we also imposed ourselves some constraints on whatever the bait would look like. It had to have an efficacy similar to standard bait, meaning that even before exposed to rain, it would have to have an efficacy comparable to standard bait. The technology to use should be inexpensive and simple. We wanted to use regular spray equipment, so whatever modified bait we would go with should be sprayable, and any additives should be non-toxic and easily converted to being used under organic standards. The method that we decided to follow was using a wax matrix because we had experience in our lab of using wax matrix for releasing pheromones for mating disruption. And this wax matrix consists of paraffin wax emulsified using an emulsifier in water. For bait, we used GF120 fruit fly bait as our standard. The approach we took was evaluating fly mortality in a series of bioassays when exposed to the standard bait and the bait plus the wax matrix. We did other bioassays to determine the optimal concentration of wax and bait to achieve maximal rain fastness and fly mortality in bioassays. We also measured the active ingredient, spinosad in this case, available on the bait and wax matrix droplets after exposure to rain, and we evaluate the efficacy of this mixture in the field. Let me first show you how actually this modified bait looks like. On the upper left corner is the bait plus wax matrix. On the right side is the same droplet after being exposed to simulated rain. You notice that some of the bait gets washed off. But as it dries out on the other picture, some of the bait actually oozes out, and we saw flies feeding from this deposit. So we think this is part of how the wax matrix would be their efficacy. For most of these bioassays, we used a rain simulator booth that John keeps at Trevor Nichols. Basically, we took branches, we deposited droplets on those on leaves, and then we exposed them to a simulated rain where we could control both the total rainfall and the duration of exposure to rain. We did several bioassays. I'll just show you the results of some that are important for our objectives. In here, we compared bait, regular bait, and the bait plus wax matrix before and after exposure to simulated rain. And what we saw was that the efficacy of GF120 mixed with the wax matrix was very similar to, it's not significantly different from the GF120 standard before exposure to rain, therefore fulfilling one of the requirements that we had for this bait. Moreover, after exposure to rain, which is this treatment here of bait, the mortality in a bioassay was comparable to the control, while mortality of the bait plus wax matrix was basically at the same level as before the simulated rainfall, and similar again to bait not exposed to rain. And I should notice that this is an exposure to 5 minutes, 2.5 millimeters of rain, which is 1/10 of an inch in 5 minutes, so it's really a light drizzle, but enough to really decrease the mortality of standard bait. In other bioassays, we looked at more specific questions like the percentage of wax to use. And here we found that 15% wax survive better exposure to similar rain than droplets made of lower concentrations of wax. And this trend stayed, we found this trend in other bioassays. In general, we came up with the feeling that higher concentrations of wax provide more rain fastness. As would be expected, higher concentrations of bait in the droplets also provided for more mortality, more fly mortality. In terms of rain fastness, there's probably an optimal point there where If you increase the percentage of bait in the droplets, the rain fastness starts to decrease. We also decided to measure the amount of spinosad available on those droplets after exposure to similar rain. Basically what we did was we used these plastic lids. We deposit droplets on those lids using a pipetter. We exposed it to rain in the same rain simulator booth. And clockwise, you see here the effect of that simulator rain by washing off the bait available on those droplets. We tried to simulate fly feeding on those droplets. We don't really know how to simulate how the labellum of the fly can remove the active ingredient from the droplet. What we did was we washed those droplets using a pipetter. And what we found was that most of the spinosad was readily available at the beginning, before the droplets are exposed to rain. And after an initial exposure to rain, that amount decreases very sharply. However, there's always some spinosad available at the surface of those droplets. And we think that this is because the bait that is inside the droplets migrates slowly to the surface after each wash. Now, after we finished with these bioacids, it was already fruit fly season, so we decided, well, let's try this in the field. And what we did was we increased the concentration of wax from the bioacids from 15 to 20%, and we used the lowest recommended rate of bait, which is diluted 1 to 5, which is 16.7% bait. What we saw when we applied was that, well, the wax matrix allowed for more bait to be retained on those leaves right from the beginning. When we sprayed the diluted bait, we saw a lot of running off the leaves immediately after spraying. We did see a decrease in fruit infestation using the GF120 with a wax matrix. However, this decrease was not sufficient to cause significant differences with regards to a control. The decrease was about 25 to 30%. We were mostly interested in comparing standard bait with the wax matrix. The lack of differences towards a control may be because spray was applied. Bait was applied at 10-day intervals, which is relatively long, and these were one-tree plots in a very infested field, meaning that flies could easily fly from neighboring tree, lay an egg before they had any chance to interact with the bait. But this assay was important because it allowed us also to better understand how bait responds or behaves in the field when exposed to the natural environment. We have here precipitation and relative humidity, and we see that there were events of rain that were extremely intense, much more than we had anticipated, several inches sometimes. We also saw the effect of relative humidity on bait plus wax matrix, relative humidity, essentially sucking the bait out of the droplets, and eventually this bait may be lost too. And so in conclusion, we saw that bait plus wax matrix was similar to standard bait, increased rain fastness, and the constraints remained sprayability because it controls the wax matrix percentage that we can use, and bait hygroscopicity. To end, I would like to acknowledge Paul Harker, Dow AgroSciences, and USDA PMF for funding. Thank you.
You're lucky, Louise. We have our break now, our 12-minute break, so we'll take a field one question or two for Louise. Anyone, any questions? Did you notice any kind of phyto from any of these applications?
No, not specifically from using the wax matrix. In some instances, we see from bait regulant, but not much.
Is that the same wax matrix you geothermal work and just diluting it down? So
essentially, yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the components are different, but it's essentially the same thing.
Thank you, Louis.
Going to export everything because they never know what field they're going to export. So they can manage in two different ways, either where they trap based or they call an IPM method, which is not really what it is. And so they have to, so for that method, if they're putting traps in their fields or by management areas, they have to treat when the 5 days within the time the first fly is caught, put a second spray on 7 to 10 days after the first spray, and then if more flies are caught, they have to spray within 5 days until chipping ceases. Or they can go on a calendar-based method where when the first fly is caught anywhere in the state, they have to start their calendar-based program 7 to 10 days on a regular schedule through picking, and they usually pick 3 times. So we think this is probably an overuse of materials and inputs. And so what we wanted to do is demonstrate to growers that since we know blueberry maggot is found on many alternate hosts, through the years we've seen that they're found mostly on the edges of fields first. So we wanted to identify those edges and show growers that this is indeed true, if it is, and to show growers that we could spatially identify where these areas are and try to, over the long term, assign a risk area to these certain areas of the farm. And then we wanted to try to get growers to individually manage these areas as identified with this method, and then ultimately reduce insecticide use and costs. So we worked with 5 growers, and I'm going to concentrate on 3 of those in this presentation, because the 3 growers, Bridge Avenue Variety and McRae Brothers, all had comparison farms. We had multiple farm sites. So we're working on a whole farm approach, but a number of growers have more than one farm site. And so we would work out a spatially based program on one farm site and then compare it to a grower standard where they're doing a regular calendar-based spray method. So the acreage that we used with these 3 yellow highlighted growers where we placed the traps was 141, 198, and 186 acres. And then you see the number of traps we used, so the trapping over the whole program averaged about 1 trap per 2.7 acres. And that's a lot of traps. So we had 1,820 acres in this. One grower was doing their own monitoring. That's Atlantic Blueberry at the bottom. And in total, we used 521 traps. Changed every 2 weeks, monitored twice a week. Oh, I see John shaking his head. Yes. Now, what we did is we compared varieties. We had the 2 basic varieties in Jersey are Blue Crop and Duke. Duke's a little earlier, Blue Crop's a little later, but those are the 2 main varieties. So you see from this slide that on Bridge Avenue we had 10 acres of Blue Crop, 115 acres of Duke in the treatment, and the reverse, there's a little bit of Duke out there now, but they're young, so they didn't spray any for this program. And you see how the acreages fall out. We had both varieties in all 3 locations, with that one exception of Bridge Avenue. Well, when you do things spatially, we have maps that we've made in ArcView. We can overlay that with the aerial work, and you can see that we can identify in the areas in yellow of abandoned sites or wild sites or organic sites. In this case, at the bottom, you see some of those yellow lines, and you see at the top that the top green area to the right is the Bridge Avenue farm. The big green, lighter green farm is variety farms, which their comparisons were about the same because that's a more conservative grower, so I'm not going to focus on them. And the farm at the bottom did not have a comparison site. But I just wanted to show you that you can identify areas where we think maggot flies would be coming from. And then this is, and this shows where we put the traps. So each dot represents a georeferenced trap. And if we take McRae Brothers, and I'm going to go through here as a little story, what happens throughout the season. This is the farm map in the blue. To the north is a vegetable farm, so that's open. On the west, south, and southeast is all woods, so we would expect to find more maggot flies in that area because we have all the alternate hosts, wild blueberry, huckleberry, in that area. So if we go through that, I'm going to go through twice a week fairly fast here. The farm location is on the lower right. You'll see some red marks, which is the nearest neighbor calculation default in ArcView where we're finding maggot flies. What we do not know is how big to make that space and how to geostatistically calculate how wide that red dot will be, because we don't know exactly how far the fly will fly in a day, and that we'll be working on in the future. But as we go through this, 6:13, 6:15, 6:18, 22, you'll see nothing's being caught yet, 26, 28. Oh, we got the first one just before the 1st of July. The graph at the upper right is total adults captured. You'll see that where that dot is was right by the woods. 7:07, another one by the woods. 7:10, 7:13, another one by the woods. 7:18, another one by the woods. 7:20, that's a little open, but it's still on an edge. 7:24, 26. There we have an internal field, very early variety that he stopped spraying. 7:31 to the one on the right is near the woods. 8:02 near the woods again. End of the season, and totals. So when you total this up, most everything was near the woods. And so the objective is, okay, can we get growers to spray by that area? And indeed, this grower wants to do that and wants to spray by the area. He's not spraying each individual field because he's grouping field and production areas for his own benefit, but in general he's spraying by the areas.